We'll start at the bottom of Nun Daled Amud Beis. Just we'll start. We started some of it yesterday, but we'll go back because it's a whole sugya here. Is about Tosefes Ksuba. What's the status of the Tosefes Ksuba? I have the part of the Ksuba or not? So Rata Lichtov Loftani. So in the Mishnah, it doesn't say that if he wants to write her a Ksuba, implying what? That it would be an independent shtar, meaning something independent of the Ksuba, but rather Rata Lahosif. But by its very name, Tosefes Ksuba, and the fact that you want to add on, it's added on to the Ksuba itself, meaning that it's a part of the Ksuba's document. So, Misaila Rabbi Aibo, I'm a Rabbi Hanai. And what? If it's part of the Ksuba versus a separate star, what does it make a difference through? So that, I'm a Rabbi Aibo, I'm a Rabbi Hanai, Tznai Ksuba, Ksuba Domi, that the Tznaim of the Ksuba, I mean, those things like Tosefes Ksuba are part of the Ksuba. So what's the nafkamina? What's the nafkamina if they're part of the ksuba or it's an independent shtar? And that's if she does something that has impact on the ksuba itself, or there's certain dinim by the ksuba, do they have application by the Tosefes Ksuba? So here we're going to go through a number of nafkamina. Each one in itself is a whole sugya, but we'll try to quickly go through them. We hit that mocheret or mochelet, right? If she sells her ksuba or she is mochel or ksuba to her husband, in each of these instances, not only is she mochel the core ksuba, she's also mochel or sells the Tosefes Ksuba. I mean that the two aren't independent. It's not just the core ksuba that she's selling or she's being mochel on, but rather both parts, the ksuba and the Tosefes Ksuba. Now, the moredet. So the moredet is a sugi we're going to see later in our perek about a woman who is not complying in some way. The Gemara that discusses what is moredet, whether she... Right, is holding back tashmish or not listening, whatever it is, there's a fine that they impose upon her that her ksuba gets diminished over a period of time. The basin can diminish her ksuba. So not only do we diminish her core ksuba, that we take into account even her Tosefes Ksuba, and we fine her even down to her Tosefes Ksuba. Ulu pogemet. So what's the case of pogemet is if she admits that some of her ksuba was already paid out. Even though she hasn't received her entire ksuba, some of it was paid out. And if she admits that a portion of her ksuba was already paid out, then she has to take a shavua before she's able to receive her ksuba. Then she has to take a shavua to receive the remaining part of the shavua. So now, either if she agrees that her part of her tosefet or tosefet was paid, right, then that will trigger the shavua as well. Again, if she wants, even if she's gotten paid, if she admits that the core was paid and she wants the tosefet, she'll still need a shvua. I mean, both of them have that status of ksuba, that if she admits to getting a portion of them, then she still needs to take a shvua on the remainder to receive it. All right, l'tovat. And remember that we said, this is from yesterday's daf, that a woman who is tobeya her ksuba in Beis Din, right, then she stops getting her rights to mizonos. Right, once she goes to Beis Din to claim her ksuba, that's the point at which we say she's collecting her ksuba and not getting paid out of the estate anymore. She's not taking mizonos from the estate. That tovat applies whether she asks for her ksuba or she asks for her tosefes ksuba. I mean, either way, if she's asking for it, then she loses her mizonos. Well, veret al dat, again, this is a mishnah later on in the Masechta, that a woman who is knowing herself inappropriately, she's not sanua in some way, whether it's there the Mishnah talks about that she's not covering her hair, not covering herself properly. So there she loses her ksuba. So when we say that the fine that she loses her ksuba from being overt al dat, right, that applies to both the ksuba itself and the tosefes ksuba. She loses everything. Right, so now for the stuff that we didn't get to yesterday, l'shevach. So what's l'shevach? So the shevach is the improvement on the property itself. So what's the improvement on the property. So if after the Yisomim have already inherited the land, they improve the land, or the land, they do something that improves the value of the land, right? That shevach that's beyond the land, who is entitled to it? So one of the items that does not get taken out of shevach is, for instance, a bechor. A bechor gets two times, right, what everybody else gets in the inheritance. That's only the inheritance at the time of the father's death. If the property is improved after that point in time of the father's death, the bechor does not get two times in that improvement, that shevach that comes afterwards. So over here, the ksuba is not collected out of that shevach. All right, she's only allowed to collect out of the property value at the time of the death of her husband. And therefore, the same is true of her tosefet ksuba. Right? It's a sefer ksuba cannot be collected out of the excess that is, or the shevach that is paraded after the death of her husband. Now, as opposed to, and this is what Tosus discusses, a bachov. Right? A bachov can, from yesomim, bachov in general cannot take shevach. Why? Because there's what the general principle the Gemara sets out is that the person that you're taking the land from, or the value from, has to have someone else to go and make a claim on. Right? So for the core property, he has a person to go back and make a claim on because someone sold it to him with a lien on it, and it has achrayut, and he has to replace that. But the improvements that he makes on the land, right, there's nobody to go back to. That was done after he already bought the property, right? And there's nobody, if there's no one for him to go back and collect from, then we don't take away his shevach. So the case of a bachov would generally be that way. Someone who borrows money would generally, if we take away the shevach, the person has no one to go to. But the exception will be yesomim. That by yesomim, we will allow him to collect from the shevach, even though there's nobody to go back to collect from there, right? Because the yesomim have nobody to make a claim on for that shevach. Because the yesomim have a quasi-obligation to pay back their father's debts. So even though they're not obligated to pay their father's debts back, right, we strongly encourage them, right, that when the father dies, that they pay out the debts that their father owes, and therefore we allow the bachov to collect even from the shevach of the yesomim. So that would be a difference. If the Tosefek Subo was its unowned document, meaning it was a separate document, it was a loan, almost like the equivalent of a loan, right, then he was a bachov to his wife, then she would be able to collect out of the shevach. But now that we're saying that the Tosefek Subo is part of the ksuba, she's not entitled to, right, not entitled to take from that shevach. All right, the Shavua. What is a Shavua? We already had one case of a Shavua that Rashi talked about where she claimed, she admits to collecting a portion of her ksuba, she would have to take a Shavua. Over here, Rashi suggests that the Shavua that she's taking over here, if there's anything that she would have to take a Shavua on her ksuba for. One is, don't shnifrei shelo b'funov. One of those is what? She's trying to collect her ksuba when he's not there. So we have no, he has no counterclaim that he already paid her or anything of the sort, so we make her take it with a Shavua. Be'eid echad meido shiprua. And they have one aid that comes to base and says it was already paid out. Right? Also, someone who collects out of encumbered property or out of the property of the yisomim has to take a shvua. Right? So the Rashi points out, because the way Rashi is learning it here, even though pogemet is the exact same case here, shvua, when she says I've already got a portion of my ksuba, she has to take a shvua, that should be included in this category of shvua here. Why did they mention pogemet and shvua? Rashi says that they wanted to explicitly state by Bekima that the Bekima of the Tosefet also helps. That even when she is pogim, admits to collecting part of the ksuba, she does have to take a shavua on the core ksuba. So he says that's why he separated it out. Tosus, on the other hand, says that shavua here comes to say that if we obligate her in a shavua on the Tosefet or on the core, that we include everything in it. We don't make her take a shavua separately. So meaning that if she comes to claim her main ksuba and has to take a shavua on it, she takes not only a shavua on the core ksuba, she takes a shavua on the entire ksuba, including the tosefet that she didn't get anything yet, or she's entitled to this. And we don't make her come back and make a separate shavua when she comes to collect the tosefet. That's the way Tosus learns it. Right, the shvius, this is topical. Right, you have a shmatas kesofim, right? You have at the end of the shvius, anything that's a loan, right, gets wiped out at the end of the shvius. So if she is, or if the Tosefet Ksuba is considered a chov, then it would get wiped out at the end of the Shvius here. Whereas what if her Tosefet is part of the Ksuba, one of the items that Shvius does not wipe out is a Ksuba. Because a Ksuba is not really a loan, it's not really about chov, right? We don't say that because until she goes to Beis Din to be Tovat, the and even there, it's a machlokes that goes to be tovat her ksuba, then already we make it into a loan, right? Because when she goes to collect it, then it comes into the form of a loan, and then the repayment is, right, part of repaying the loan. But until that point in time, it's not really a chov. It's not really a, he's not a baal chov in the sense of a loan. The ksuba is a document that survives through the end of the shvius and does not get touched by hashmatas kesofim. Right, so therefore, at the end of Shvius, if the Tosefet Ksuba is part of your Ksuba, then it'll survive the end of Shvius, and it won't be Nishmat with the Ksuba. Whereas if it's an independent loan, it would be wiped out by the end of Shvius. Right now, also, Ulukotev Kol Nechosu Lebanav, Legavos Min HaKarkos. This is a case we mentioned yesterday, where a case where Rabbi Yochanan was giving advice to his relatives. But over here, where she's willing to accept, she accepts a property as a payment. He writes off all, he gives all his property away to his children, and he gives her a small piece of property, and she accepts it as payment for her ksuba. In that case, she loses her ability to what, to collect her ksuba afterwards. That is the only payment for a ksuba. So that will apply not only to the kor ksuba, but also to the sefek ksuba. Whatever she accepts is payment for both the kor ksuba and the tosefek ksuba. Next thing is umina ziboris. A woman who gets a ksuba is only able to pay, take from his the worst property. And when she goes to collect from property, the Gemara assumes there are three standards of property. There is Benonis, which is the middle, right? Then there is Ziboris, which is the lower end of his property, and a Idis, the best of his property. So when a woman's ksuba, Bacho, gets to take from Benonis, a ksuba only gets to collect out of the Ziboris, out of the worst of his property, right? That's where she, her priority is to that property. Obviously, if he doesn't have it, then she collects from the other properties. But she takes from the worst level of property when she comes. So the Tosefek ksuba is also like the ksuba where he only gets to, she only gets to collect from the Ziboris and not from the Benonis, which a Bachov would be entitled to collect from. Right? Bachov's manchi bebeis avia. So now again, when she does not collect her ksuba, but rather stays in the estate, right, and then eats mizonos out of the estate. So as long as she stays in the estate itself, say she, and with the Yisomim, basically she takes care of the Yisomim, she does work with them, she's entitled to collect her ksuba at any point, forever. It's an unlimited, there's no time limit. There's no time limit on that. Whereas if she leaves the house and goes back to her father's house and still gets mizonos from the Yisomim, after 25 years, she's no longer able to collect her ksuba. She loses her right to collect her ksuba because she's not really servicing the Yisomim anymore, and therefore we automatically assume that she is mochelet on her ksuba. Not only is she mochelet on her ksuba, but she's mochelet on her tosefek ksuba. That's the, again, the din here. After 25 years. Ksuba's benin dichrin. The last nafkamino is for what's included in the ksuba's benin dichrin, the gzeir of the chachamim, or the takanas chachamim, that the male children will collect her ksuba after the death of her husband, right? They will collect not only her ksuba, they will also collect the tosefek ksuba. Their entitlement in the ksuba's benin dichrin to take priority over their half-brothers will not only be for her ksuba itself, but also for the tosefek ksuba. All right. All of these, each one a sugya by itself. But the Gemara is saying that that's the nafkamina for tosefek ksuba, that each one of these issues that has a special status with regards to ksuba, which would be different for a Baal Chov, in each of these cases, the tosefek ksuba is just like the ksuba and not like a Baal Chov. All right. Yitmar, ksuba's benin dichrin. You come to collect, they come to collect the ksuba's benin dichrin. Pumpadita amre lotar from mishabde. They're not allowed to take this out of encumbered property, property that was already sold. Right. It says, why? Because in the ksuba, the writing of the ksuba is yartun tanan, that they'll be yorshim. Right? They'll be, and just like a yoresh does not take out of, right, encumbered property, property that was sold already by their father, so too, what? A ksuba's benin dichrin, even though it's a documented, right, obligation, nevertheless, they will not, since it works like Yerusha, since it works like Yerusha, they will not collect out of the mishab, the encumbered property. But ein mata maxiam tafim mishabde. No, because they can't take it out of encumbered property. The ksubas din dichrin. Why? Yisbuntan tonight. That when it writes about the ksubas din dichrin, the lashon of the ksubas din dichrin does not say yartun, right? That they will be yorishit, but rather that they will get here. Din dichrin to have a leichem inai. This is the mishnah on the nun beis amud beis. Right, that any property, any male children that I have from you, inun, so what would they get? Yartun, that's what the, right, Pumpadita said, they will inherit kesef ktubatech, the money of your ksuba. But if you write yisbun, yisbun is a lashon of chov, right, it will be obligated to them, this money, and it will be like a baal chov. And a baal chov is able to go back and take out from the property that was already encumbered. So that is the machlokas, depending on what's written in the ksuba. I mean, if it's written yartun or yisbun, which is written v'hilchasa lo tarfe mimishabde. The halacha is, that's the way our Mishnah reads, and then beis amud beis, that's what? You cannot take it out of this encumbered property, yartun tanan. It's like a yerusha, and therefore what? They can't collect out of the property there. Metaltali bi'itnehu bi'inayhu. So now what happens if there are metaltalim that are designated for her ksuba, payment of her ksuba? So after the death of her husband, she goes to collect her ksuba, and she has these specific items that were laid out as being that the payment for, specifically for the payment of the ksuba. So below shavua, right, then she does not have to make a shavua. Why do we make a woman make a shavua before when she comes to collect from Metaltalim, why do we ask her to make a Shavua when she comes to collect her Ksuba? Because we're afraid that he set aside some money somewhere that was to pay her Ksuba, and she took that already, and now she's coming for to collect again on her Ksuba. Right? Somehow there was a Tzuri Kaspe, meaning that there was a bag of money that she has for Ksuba, and now she's coming to collect, and she really already had been paid out on her Ksuba. So, over here, since we have in front of us the metaltalim, and they're specifically designated for the ksuba, so we know what he put aside for her. This is what he put aside for her. We don't have to worry about her getting something else, because we know that these were designated for the ksuba right now, and they're still here. Right? So what happens? Right? They're no longer here. Meaning that there were metaltalim designated for the payment of ksuba, but they're not here anymore. So now what? Pumbadita amrei below shavua, that she still gets it without a shavua, right? Because we don't assume that she took these items, right? We assume that they were sold off or gone, and therefore she gets to collect. But right, that she has to take a shavua, because now what, the fact that they're not in front of us, maybe it's because she took them already, right? And therefore when she's coming to collect, she's coming to collect a second time. Or she says, claims they were lost. Whatever the reason is that she's claiming they're not here anymore, we assume that maybe she did already take, or she got her payment somehow else. So now, she does not need to take a shavua in this case. Okay. Right? He designated for her a property to pay out her ksuba that has four borders, meaning that he enumerated what the exact borders of the property that is what designated for her. Below shavua. Then she collects without a shavua. Why? Because it's clear exactly what he designated, and that's available to her to take. B'chad mitzro, what happens if he only designated the property with one border? Okay, he only enumerates one border. Pumpadita amrei below shavua. So that's fine that she can take it without, she can collect on this without taking a shavua. Because she still, what, depended on that property. The fact is that it has one border there and she knows where that property is. B'dei amrei b'shavua, she has to take a shavua. Why does she have to take a shavua? She has to take a shavua because since she didn't write, the husband did not write the four borders of where he can collect from, she doesn't really, that's not really a property she was considering or really depended on to get her ksuba. And maybe her husband paid her out with money somewhere else. The fact that the husband didn't enumerate the four borders means that he was kind of mentioning that property, not making it a total, right, designation for the ksuba. And therefore, maybe he gave her some money somewhere else. So we make her take a shavua. Right, that she collects without a shavua. The fact that he already mentioned this property and this one border is enough to assume that that's where she collected them. There's no other money that was put out.
What's the machlokas between them here?
What is the machlokas between Pupadita and Bnei Matamachsia? Is whether when he gives her a ksuba, when he designates four borders, it's clear that that's what he intended to pay her a ksuba out of, right? And therefore he didn't designate any other money to pay out the ksuba. When he only mentions one border, maybe he realized, you know, that wasn't a real designation for Ksuba because he only mentioned one border. In fact, he only mentioned one border was kind of, it was half-hearted that he made this the designation for the Ksuba, and maybe he paid her otherwise. He gave her money somewhere else that he designated for Ksuba, and that's where she already took that money for Ksuba, and now she's trying to collect again, right, based
you know,
on that.
It's connected to Yarsin Tanan or Yisban Tanan?
No, so not at all. That is, Ksuba's been in Dechwin, but it is connected to the earlier case where they had Metaltalin being Nayu. It's a similar case like that, which is where you had the Metaltalin. Do we assume if the Metaltalin were designated specifically for her and now they're not here in front of us, that was what he intended, and when they're not here, she can go and collect otherwise? Or do we start suspecting that she took money from somewhere else or she had money designated somewhere else, and therefore we have to make her take a shavua to get the rest, so she's not double dipping with her ksuba. So the case is it's similar to that case where are we afraid when there was a designation of some sort for the ksuba that it wasn't a full designation, either because here it was only one border mentioned, or above because the metaltalim are no longer here, they were lost or somehow they disappeared. Do we assume then that the husband beforehand thought about this and then designated other money for her? Right, and therefore, since he knew his wife wouldn't really depend on this, he went ahead and paid her or gave her money somewhere else for the ksuba. And when she comes to collect on this piece, we say she's got to take a shavua. Or do we say, which is the halacha in both these cases, no, that by the fact that he designated somehow some sort of property for her, that there is no other property that's here that's being designated for the ksuba, and she has nowhere else to collect from, and she doesn't have to take a shavua. Right? The yartun yisbuntan is a separate issue for the Yorshim, her Yosomim, her orphans, when they come collect her ksuba from her husband, when she predeceases her husband, she's no longer here, she predeceases her husband, they want to collect her ksuba, that do they, are they able to take that ksuba only from his free and clear property, which is Yartunskan, right, that was Yerusha, or are they able to go back to the buyers of his property and say, listen, we're Bali Chov, we're at your Abakenim, our shtar predates your shtar, and therefore we can collect even out of your property, we're going to take it back. Okay, so that's the case there. It happens to be the same that the Pumbedita and Matamachsi are arguing in all these cases. So Vehilchaso, the loch is below Shvua. So Amar le'edim, kitvu v'chitmu, right, tovu v'chitmu, that they should write the shtar and sign it. V'havale, right, so then give it to them. So now this is a case of a shchiv mira, right, in a case with he's trying to give a present to someone, right? So he says, write them the document, sign the document, and give it to him. But not only does he do that, kanumine, they make a kinyan chalipin on the land, right? Lo tzarech limluchive, they don't have to go back when they go to actually write the shtar. They don't have to go back to him to check if he really meant it. Why don't they have to go back and check? Because he made a kinyan. The fact that he rushed to make a kinyan on the property shows that he really wants this to happen. Since he really wants it to happen, then we don't go back and check with him whether he really wants to give this present. Lo konomine, if they did not make a kinyan at the time. What happens if they didn't make a kinyan at the time? Pumbedita amrei lo tzorcha le'amluchebe. Pumbedita say you don't have to go back and check with him really, really meant it. Because he said, write it, sign it, and give it to him. That's enough. They don't have to go back. No. The fact that he didn't go ahead and make a kinyan at that time doesn't give it the tokef, the strength of a matana that you don't have to check, and then you have to go back when you go write the document, and when you go to write it out and make it permanent or fixed, then you have to go back, right, and what? Check with him that he really meant it. And the halacha is here, like b'nei matamaxia, that what? So you have to check with him again. You can't simply assume that he wants to give it, and we want to make sure that this is really the case. Okay. All right, new sugya. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So, in the where is this? Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, we talked about, was in the Mishnah that the ksuba is min asuim govat a kol minei erusin besula gove matayim amana mana. Right. So there's no gemir sadas by the tosefet ksuba until he's married. I mean that the erusin obligates him according to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in the kor ksuba. The Tosefes Ksuba that he writes only happens at the time of the Nisuin. Same thing as the dowry that her father gives in. That also, the Baal is only Yorish that at the time of Nisuin. Meaning that if she passes away from Erusin, he's not entitled to that dowry that his father gives. So Itmar, Rabbi Rabbi Natan, Chadamar, Alokha Kurab Lazar Mazariah, Vachadamar, Ain Alokha Kurab Lazar. One says Alokha is like Rabbi Lazar Mazariah, one says not. So Al Gemara is Tistayim. Let us conclude that Rabbi Natan, Udamar, Alokha Kurab Lazar Mazariah. He is the one that says, Rabbi Natan is the one who says Allah is like a Rezariah, the Shaminan Le Rabbi Natan, that's about their umdana. That we go after an assumption. Umdana means that we make an assumption of or presume what the thought of the party was at the time that they signed the document. What does that mean? That we don't know what the husband meant. When he put in the Tosefek Suba, did he intend to give it to her right away? Or did he what? Did he intend for it only to happen at the time of Nisuin? So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah says, we assume that he only meant to happen at the time of Nisuim. So we have an umdana. The umdana is that we're making an assumption that most people who would give a shtar would only add the Tosefes Ksuba at the time of Nisuin, not at the time of Erusin. So we find in other places that Rabbi Natan makes this what we call like an assumption for the person. What's that? Amar Rabbi Natan, Halacha k'Rab Shimon ben Shizuri. The halacha is like Rabbi Shimon Zuri, but Mesukan, right? Ube Trumas Meiser Shel Demai. Right, that the halacha is like Rabbi Shimon ben Zuri, when a masukan means what? Someone's in danger, right? In danger here, meaning that he could die, right? And Trumas Meiser of demise. We'll do masukan first, because this is actually the proof of the Gemara. What's the case of masukan? This is a case in Masechas Gittin, where a person is shchiv meira, basically. The case there in the Gemara in Gittin is that shchiv meira is on his deathbed, and he says, go ahead and give a get to my wife. Right, to give a wife to prevent her from having to do yibum after his death. So there, do we say when he meant write a get for her? I'm sorry, when he says write a get for her, when he says write a get for her, do we assume he means write a get and give it to her? Right? Or when he says write, it just means write the get. Then we'll decide when to give it to her. So there the Gemara says that we assume that when he meant write the get, he meant give the get. So there, over there, the Gemara answers up, that adds on in the Mishnah other things that are similar to Shkud Meira. One of them is Emma Farish Vayotze Bishorah. Someone's going on a big trip, right? Or someone's going Ayotze Leyam, going on a Spina, or somebody's being taken to Kolar, being taken out to death. Right? So all these cases are where a person is Torah Fidato. He can't think, and he's in a, when he put in a very precarious situation. So we assume when he says, no, give it, right, then he meant not only give it, but write it, give it, I mean, when he says, I'm sorry, when he says write it, he meant write it and give it to her. Right?
So that's a good. The word counts at that point.
Right, so that's what we say over here. So if you look in Rashi, the last Rashi, Mesukan, right, so he says, Mesukan, Gitan, I'm a farish, Vayotze, Bishayar, Omer, Kit, who get Lishti, write a gift for my wife. Apple, Pish, Lo, Amar, Tnu, even though he didn't say to give it. Right? Harielu yichtibu viyitnu. We say write it and give it. Why? De machmas tirdasahu shubal al nafsho. He's so worried about the situation, meaning that it's a dangerous situation he's about to enter. He didn't get to finish what he wanted to say. Right? Umikara likatvu vitnu niskavin. That's what he intended. We think that's what he meant. Rav Shimon Mizuri Omer afa masukan. Anybody's in danger of a goses. Right, someone who is in deathly ill. Final butter umdon dato. This is we assume what he was thinking. Tamrin and lo amar kitvu elashiyitnu. Right, we don't say he didn't say them to write it or to keep it, but rather to give it. Ho masuka no lo nitzkavin letzachik. Well, he's not trying to make a joke, right, and teaser that he's writing the get. No, when he said write the get, he means give the get. So we see from Rabbi Nathan the fact that he passes like Rabbi Shimon Zuri, we do this umdon das. We assume what he meant. Okay, in these cases. Now, Trumas Meiser Shel Demarai, what's the Trumas Meiser? This is nothing to do with our sugya. This happens to be another statement of Halacha of Rav Shimon ben Zuri, which is what? That in general, we assume by Demai. We assume that you have to separate out. There's a lot of today, Halacha Meiser, that today, not this year because of Shviyas, but in general, we assume that a lot of produce that we buy, when it doesn't have a proper Hekshan, it has a Din of Demai. Right? A Din of Demai means that we're not sure if Trumos and Maestros were taken off. So there's a gzeira, or a takana that, what? That we assume that truma was always taken. Since truma was a very small amount, people are afraid of truma, we assume that truma was taken off. Maaser Rishon, we do not assume was taken off. Now, why is Maaser Rishon a problem? Maaser Rishon in and of itself would not be a problem, because is a money of the levy. So since there's no claimant here, because it's a mamon amuto basafik, it's really a safek about whether he's entitled to it, he has to come with a badai claim. So the Maaser Rishon itself is not a problem. What is a problem is what? Trumas Maaser. Because Trumas Maaser has, just like Truma, has a Chiyuv Misa Bidei Shemayim. There's a Chiyuv Misa Bidei Shemayim. If you don't take off Maaser Rishon, there is still Trumas Maaser embedded in there. And what? And therefore, you cannot eat this Tevel without being Mafreshit. But that, the Amei Haaretz, those people who do not take off, who may take off Trumas, will not take off Maaser Rishon, and therefore there's a problem with Trumas Maaser. So for Demai, We assume what? We assume that Truma Gedola was taken off, but we do not assume that Maaser Rishon or Truma's Maaser was taken off. Today, we take it off because Truma is also nothing. Basically, when you separate out, if you look at the Loshon, when people take off Truma's and Maaser's today, we basically say what? We say that you take off a little more than 1%. Right? So why a little more than 1%? The little extra above the 1% is for the Truma itself. And the 1% is what? The Trumas Maaser that is connected to the other 9%. You say in the Lashon that there's another 9% that you leave behind, that is Maaser Rishon. And that 1% plus a little more is the Trumas Maaser and the Truma that you take off. Now, in general, we don't say, if you ask the Amaretz, if he took it off, if you ask the person who is Choshud on Trumas and Maaseros, if you ask him who took it off, and he says, yes, we don't believe him. We don't assume, he's a Nogea Badar, we don't believe him. There's one exception, and that's on Shabbos. You're not allowed to be mafris Trumas and Maaseros on Shabbos. So by a case of Demai, the Chamim were makil by Shabbos to ask him whether it was taken off. But it's a funny situation that what happens, he's only believed on Shabbos and for Shabbos. As soon as Motzei Shabbos comes around, you can't eat from that anymore. You have to go ahead and then separate it out. So Rashi over here says the reason that the Chamim believed him is because of Oneg Shabbos. In order not to ruin the Oneg Shabbos of the person who bought the produce, we allow him to go ask and go for Shabbos. Once Shabbos is over, there's no din of Oneg Shabbos, so he has to go be mafrish. Right? Tosus says no, that he thinks it's a din in Emas HaShabbos, that the fear of Shabbos is upon the Yom HaAretz, And just like the fear of Shavuos, there's basis on a Yerushalmi, so too there's an Emes HaTruma on the Am HaAretz. So if you go and ask him, did he really take off Maisa Rishon with the Truma, that fear is enough to what steer him away from lying. So just like Shavuos has a certain unique quality to the Am HaAretz, that there's a certain fear of Shavuos, we know that, right? In general, people have a certain respect for that, for the Shavuos, even if they don't keep the Shavuos, they know that it's a special thing. So too they have an Emes HaTruma with them. So it doesn't say, so the Halacha is like Rishon Menzuri in this, that we allow him on Shabbos to ask whether it was taken off, and we believe the Am HaAretz on Shabbos itself. Right? Again, nothing to do with our sugya, just two halachos that the halacha is like Rishon Menzuri. So Mar says, "Velo Rav lo azul barter umtana." So our assumption was that Rabbi Natan was the one who says the halacha is like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. Why? Because he's the one who says we go after this assumption or presumption of what the intention of the person was. So we don't have that by Rav too. Baha Itmar, don't we have a statement of Rav? Matonas Shchiv Meira Shekotov Bakinyan. So now what happens? A Shchiv Meira, someone who's on their deathbed, right, and then says, give this, we allow him orally. This is a Takanas Mechamim, so that the person will not be Bahul, that we allow him to say exactly what we want to happen with this property. He says, give this to this person, give this to this person. We allow it, we say it goes, we write it, and we do it without him writing it. It's not, there's no Kinyan needed in general. We don't say there's any Kinyanim. So Matanas Shechid Mira, but what happened was that what? They wrote a shtar with a kinyan in it. He made that it has a kinyan in the shtar. So now what? With a Shechid Mira could have sufficed with simply saying what he wanted to happen. The fact that he added in a kinyan in the shtar, what does that do? Does that bolster, meaning that it makes it even a stronger, right, stronger statement in a Shechid Mira? Or do we say that it undermines what he was trying to do as a Shechid Mira? The fact that he went to a kinyan means he didn't really want it to be a Matana Shechid Mira. What's the difference? The difference has to do with what happens if the guy gets better. He's on his deathbed. He gifted all his property out. And then all of a sudden he gets up from his deathbed. He's walking around again. Now he's a problem. He gave away all his possessions on his deathbed. So we say if he was a Shechid Mira, if he did it as a Shechid Mira, then what? Then we assume that his intention was not to do that. And we reverse everything he did. If he leaves over, there the law says, if he leaves over a small parcel of property for himself, gives away everything else, then even when he gets up, he doesn't get it back. Why? Because that means that he had in mind that the possibility that he might survive this, and that's why he left himself a little bit. Right now, when he goes ahead and makes a kinyan on it, then it's like a present of a bari, like a healthy person making a present. A healthy person who makes a present, what? Can he reverse it when he decides no? The answer is no, he can't reverse it. So that's the question here. The present here, what did he do? So Rav, so here, Rav, Bevei Rav, Mishmei the Rav, in the base metrish of Rav, in the name of Rav, Amrei, Arkavei, Altrei Rechshe. Right, so the Rav says, what's Rochvei Arechesh? That's what we have in Megillas Esther, Rochvei Arechesh, right, the chosen steeds, right? I mean, it's like he's riding on two horses, that is, two chariots, meaning that it's even a stronger Kenyan now. He has both studim to it. He has the tzad of Shechid Mira and the tzad of what? Of a Kinyan Gomer Bari. So that means what? Not only he can't, one is that he can't reverse it, right? That's one side of it. And the other one is that, what's the other side for the Shechid Mira, the strength of the.
Doesn't have to be a ksav.
Right, he doesn't have to have a ksiva, although here he's coated by a Kinyan. They put a Kinyan in the ksiva, but right, he could just say tznu, so it works. It works works both ways. That meaning that he has the strength of both sides. All right. Oh, right. The other, we're going to see in a second what's the additional thing, which is that he can, for instance, if he gave over a loan to someone, right? So what happens if he says, somebody owes me money, and I'm giving that, he now has to pay this other individual. So in general, you can't make a kinyan on a loan, right? So here, Shechid Mira has that ability because he can orally dictate and move things around. So Shechid Mira has the ability to move around the loan. So for instance, if Reuven owes Shimon money, and Shimon's dying, he can say to Levi, give my loan over to Levi, and Reuven will now have to pay Levi, and the kinyan work. That's what Rashi explains. All right, so this. Shmuel Amar Lo Yidana Ma'idun Ba. Right, so Shmuel says, we don't know what to do with this guy. So what does it mean we don't know? He loses out with both sides. We don't know if he intended to be a Kinyan Bari or a Kinyan Shechid Mira, meaning that he undermined it, and therefore it's weaker on both sides. It's like the gift of a healthy person, what? It can't be reversed. Right, Bari Hiki Matana Shkamira, Hari Kim, and it's like Matana Shkamira. Hari Kimana's Bari Dim Amarin Yachulach Zorba, we can't go back on it. Hari Kimatana Shkamira, it's like the present or a gift of a person on their deathbed. Shimar Halvati Laploni, Halvato Laploni. If he says, my loan, the loan that I give out to someone else now belongs to this third party, it works. Even though Rashi says, in general, you can't move that through a Kinyan Khalifin, you can't move that over because it's a matbeya, it's money, and you can't exchange money that way. Nevertheless, we allow you to move it. A shchiv mira can move that property over, even though a bari cannot move it over in this way. Okay. Ushmul amar lo yidana ma'idon ba. Shmuel says, I don't know what to do with this guy. Shema lo gomar laknot el b'shtar. Maybe he only intended to work with the shtar. I mean, he made a kinyan in the shtar. Bein shtar lacha misa. And shtar doesn't work after misa. That means if he dies, there is no kinyan here. All right? Or maybe he intended it to work as a shchiv mira. And therefore means if he gets up and he's a bari, if he gets up and he is healthy, he'll get all his property. He would get all his property back. So he gets weak on brother. So Ella, so the mezmi, tarvayu azli batar umdino. Both Rav and Rabbi Natan have this principle that we assume what the person meant. We make an assumption or presumption about what he was intending to do. Manda amar halach l'shapir. The one who holds, like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah in our Mishnah, that goes well, because that's their tongue. That's according to their own shita, that you make a presumption or assumption of the intent. Manda amar halach, the one here, we don't know which one it is, who says the halach is not like Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, right? Halachanami umdon datahu. Right? Mishum ikruve datahu. Right? Why do we make a assumption or presumption here? What's the presumption here? It's because he will only gift it to her because of the closeness he feels to her, only the love that he feels towards her. So when does that start? Does that only start at the point of Nisuin? Or maybe the love starts even at the fact that he's willing to have Erusin and he was willing to engage her, right? That fact is already a sign of love, and that love starts at that point in time, and he wouldn't even give the Tosefek Suba at that point in time.